You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Wes Grantham. Wes is a wonderful director whose work I've admired for a long time. We overlapped at the University of Evansville, and when I eventually moved to New York City, he was someone who was already used to the city and was collaborating and making work with friends. It was very inspiring. So I've really enjoyed watching him as he's grown his career over the years. He's also the artistic director of the theater company Crowded Outlet, which you've heard me talk about before on episode 32 with Chad Goodridge, who's involved with that as well. I hope you enjoy the 45th episode of The Compass.
Podcast. Is this the earliest you've done it?
I think so.
Okay.
But it's good. It's getting me started in my day, and then I'll be productive.
Nice. Okay, good.
So how do you try to keep from going to the dark side as an artist?
Well, this week I rediscovered running, and I think that's been a way, like, you know, earlier in my career that I would keep from going to the dark place a lot. And somewhere along the way, maybe it was, you know, the sort of juggling having a child and trying to keep a career going, I forgot about running. And I ride my bike a lot, but it's just not the same thing. It's not as intense in terms of cardio, and you don't get all the endorphins going the same way. Mm-hmm. And so I'm rediscovering running, and I'm learning that starting my day that way is really nice in terms of keeping my head in a good spot and just keeping me motivated and excited about the day, as opposed to overwhelmed about the day or feeling
already.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What does the dark side look like for you usually?
It looks like lashing out at the wrong people. it looks like, you know, I'm pretty good at hiding it. You know, some people are surprised when I do talk to my close friends about the things that I'm feeling. They're like, oh, I had no idea.
Right.
But I think that, you know, oftentimes if I'm working on a project or just stupid things around the house, I'll, you know, blow up about something so dumb. And it's just because there's this thing in my family where we just like stuff it down and stuff it down and stuff it down. And then, you know, something's got to give eventually. Yeah.
You know, when you're working on projects, there's just one director, so there's a scarcity there.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And I know you came straight to New York after undergrad. You didn't do grad school, right?
Right, right.
And so you've been here a long time, and you've been building connections and doing a lot of different things. What do you find kind of the balance between, in the last 10 years, like, making your own work or trying to, like, work your way up the ladder within the system?
Yeah.
Has it been surprising to you the way it's worked out?
A little bit. I mean, it really does, or it has for me. I've had to generate a lot of my own work, even when I'm getting things produced through organizations like that. That's a long process of pitching a project to an artistic director or, you know, a producer, and you know, they producers don't want to produce things just, you know, willy-nilly. They really want to get to know you. They really want to trust the piece that you're creating. And so to get someone to give a young director the reins, I guess I'm not so young anymore, but I was, to get someone to give you the reins takes a lot of work, and you have to really make them feel confident in your ability to pull the production together. And so that was something I didn't, you know, early in my career when I was, even before I started my career, like in college, when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, I would just say, like, I'm going to be a director, because I felt like I was surrounded by actors, and I was not the best actor. And I went to a school with a lot of very good actors, and so it became clear really quickly that I should do something different. And so I started looking, and I explored dramaturgy, and I explored sound design, and it became clear that directing was really what I wanted to do. And in college, I felt sort of, I was like, oh, no one else really wants to do this. I mean, there were a few people, but for the most part, they all wanted to be actors. And I was like, oh, well, this is my little spot. And then when I got to New York, I was like, oh, yeah, for every production, there are, you know, maybe 20 actors or 10 actors or whatever, and there's one director. So the opportunities are, and it's a, the opportunities are fewer. And it's a thing that you know, people start trusting you to direct later in life once you've had some experience doing other things. So when I moved here, I did a lot of assisting and interning and all of that stuff to sort of work my way up and also figure out, sort of make it my own grad school and figure out what I wanted to do and find people to observe so I could hone my craft and figure out how I want to do it.
Yeah. And I know that was a while ago, but for anyone listening who's a young director, like, how do you get in the door to assist?
Yeah. It's tough. Yeah, networking and applying for all the fellowships. And the Drama League was a really great sort of gateway for me. And Williamstown is a great way to meet people and a great way to meet, you know, expert directors and be paired with them. The funny thing is my wife, who's an actor, was doing this show in San Diego right when she got out of grad school. So I was like just then starting to try to assist on sort of a higher level. And I decided just to write to the man who was directing the play she was doing out at the Old Globe. And, you know, this was it was John Rando, and he's a, you know, Tony-winning director. And I sent him a letter, you know, a paper letter in the mail, and I never heard from him. And it's not because he's a bad guy. It's just because he's a busy man, and I'm sure he gets a lot of submissions. And I bet, you know, who knows if that paper letter even got opened. two or three years later, I applied for Williamstown and the Drama League, and randomly they both paired me to assist John Rando.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, so I worked with John for I don't know, 3 years, and then he started to, you know, I assisted him on projects of various sizes all over the country, and then he started to give me projects that he couldn't, or push me toward things he didn't want to do or didn't have time for, smaller things, and that was a huge help in getting my career started.
What role has, like, partnering with playwrights played in your career? Because I know that's kind of always a great way for actors or directors to kind of find someone whose work speaks to you and you both appreciate each other.
Yeah, that's been a huge thing. And there's a writer named Matt Smart that I worked with a lot, especially earlier in my career. And, you know, you really just find those voices that speak to you. The tricky thing about that for young directors is that you can work on, and this has happened to me, you can work on developing a play, and then as soon as Manhattan Theater Club wants to do it, you know, you have to make sure you're in a place and have the relationship that you're the person that they want to direct it. And I feel like for a lot of my peers, that's happened too. You know,
it's tricky for everyone involved, because of course the playwright wants the play
of course
produced at whatever cost, even if they prefer if you directed it.
Yeah, and I feel like for directors that can be like the darkest time, when you put, you know, your blood, sweat, and tears into something, and of course the playwright wants you to work on it, but they want to get their play produced, and right, you know, they have to do what they got to do. And yeah, but it, you know, that's like the ultimate rejection, when you feel like you've been like working on something and then someone's like, well, not anymore.
Right.
Thanks for getting it to this place, and now this person's going to take over.
Right.
So.
Can we talk about Crowded Outlet?
Yeah, I'd love to. I know.
I want to hear about what gave you this idea to start this new company.
Yeah, I mean, Chad and I have been friends for a very long time, and we, earlier in our careers, we collaborated together quite a lot, and then he sort of went his way and started working on, you know, big things like Passing Strange and a lot of other stuff, and I started working on projects where there just weren't roles for him, and it just sort of was that way for a few years. And then one day we were sort of talking about life and our careers and the work we wanted to create. And we're like, wait, why aren't we doing something together? This was very much a part of like how we, like Chad was the first actor I knew in the city. He let me stay on his couch when I was coming to interview for internships and things. So he was really like my first like non-college connected friend in the city. And so we started talking a lot about the abundance of artists and theatrical visions and aesthetics that exist in the city that we don't feel get amplified the way that they could or should. And so we sort of made a list of artists that we really wanted to find a way to amplify their voices and give them a forum to either explore new work or maybe flex a muscle that they don't get to flex, like in an acting career, or if they're, you know, a writer that wanted to explore dance or whatever it was, but just either flexing a new muscle or finding a forum to have their work heard.
I'm so grateful that you had that idea. That's really lovely to try to give other people a platform.
Yeah, definitely. And I did ask myself at the beginning, like, does like Off Broadway really need another small theater company? And it's a good question. And I decided, yeah, it needs this theater company. And so Chad and I we've only been at it for, I guess, 7 months or so, or 8 months. We've already done a lot. People got really excited about it at the beginning, and especially the artists that we included in the Surge program, which basically creates like a little platform or a springboard for work, a new different artist each month, which was kind of an ambitious undertaking, but one that's been really fruitful. And I think that artists really responded to the fact that like, oh, you're just going to give me like a month to, and it's, you know, the month isn't all in the space, but there's sort of a month leading up to a big day of exploration that might have a public presentation or might just be a rehearsal experiment that's private and for the artists involved.
Yeah, because sometimes you just need someone to like give you that deadline or something to, even if it's just for exploring, it's not like you need a finished product, but then to get you moving on a project.
Yeah, and that's really what it's designed to do. And there are some artists that we have involved that have things that they're developing for other organizations, and what we tell them is, you know, that's great, but I think you should continue to develop those things for those organizations. And what we want to do is provide you an opportunity to explore something that no one's asking you to do. No one's commissioning you to write this one crazy play that's like, you know, in your mind. That's what we want. That's what we want to sort of give you the space to explore and to start.
And you guys produced your first producing part of it and the fundraising and all of that?
I mean, it's not new to me, really. I mean, I was a part of a theater company called Slant Theater Project for a number of years, and I still am affiliated with them to some degree. They're all great friends, but there was a lot of producing that I had to do along with them throughout the years, and I was one of the artistic directors for 10 years, and so there was a lot of like growing together and figuring out how to produce on getting better and better at producing and fundraising and raising production values and finding.
Do you enjoy that side of it?
I enjoy producing. I don't enjoy doing all of it. I like producing and I do, as a producer, I tend to take on too much because I'm pretty specific about what I want, even like what I think the emails should look like or, and so for a while, like with Slant in the beginning, like I was doing all of the graphic design and, laying out all the postcards and, you know, things like that. And, I've learned that I really enjoy delegating those responsibilities to graphic artists and allowing myself to be surprised by what those images might look like or what they might see in a play or a way to advertise it and catch people's attention. So there are some parts of it I really enjoy. Like I really enjoy sort of figuring out the plan for how we're going to attack a production, and especially with off Broadway, it's different because you don't have a space. Everything is like even just figuring out where to take out the garbage can be a whole ordeal in this city, and so what I've really enjoyed is working with Chad to figure out how we can do those things better and smarter and greener, because theater can be such a sort of wasteful business, especially when you don't have like a warehouse to store things. You know, things have to go somewhere. In this most recent play that we produced, Lone Star Spirits, that was set in a liquor store, and there was a working cooler, like a beer cooler, on stage. And just like we didn't really think about what it would take to get something as simple as like a beer cooler into the space, but getting it in and out was like at the end. It was at the 4th Street Theater, and it's connected to New York Theater Workshop. And people that go up to their offices have to pass through the little lobby. And so there were literally, when we were bringing this cooler out of the theater, like the entire staff of New York Theater Workshop just like standing on the stairway, like marveling at this like crazy circus act that was getting this cooler out of the theater. There were pulleys and ropes and dollies and...
You had to bring it through that front door.
Yeah, through that front door and down like those like 6 or 7 steps. Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, it was...
Story.
Yeah, because like even the pizza men like wanted to like come and help out. Like when they saw what we were doing, like when we got out to the street level, people were like, "Holy shit, what are they doing?" Oh, I don't know if I can say shit. Okay, great. Anyway, they were just like, "What are they doing?" And then they wanted to jump up and lend a hand. So yeah, I feel like those are the moments when it's like you're producing and everything's a crazy headache, and then you do it, and you're like, "Why? Well, I did that. We did that, and it's all worth it." And no one died.
So your wife is an actress. You're both artists.
We are.
And you have a beautiful little boy.
Thank you.
So can I ask, just because Frankie and I want to have kids one day, I'm thinking about all these things. Like, how have you guys kind of deciding to be parents, working it out now with your life in New York City?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've just learned to take it as it comes. When we first started trying to have kids, it happened really quick, and we were very fortunate. But also, I was especially very surprised.
I thought you'd have more time to spare.
Exactly. When I got the phone call, I was like, "Oh!" And I think I did hang up on Amelia. I think I said, "I'll have to call you back." And I just took a walk and had to like be like, "Oh, this is really happening." And not only I knew it was happening within like this year, hopefully, but no, this is happening now. And so I think I've just had to, you know, learn that everything is going to take adjustment. Everything is going to take some flexibility. And my career is not the most important thing anymore. And not that I've been sort of very career focused, and I still am in a lot of ways, but now the priority shift, and it's okay for that to take a back seat, because you know careers are long, life hopefully is long, and everything will happen when it's supposed to happen. And the last thing I would want is to be one of those dads that's you know, never there,
yeah.
Or you know, just off. So I mean, we're on the brink of me going out of town for the first time, and I'm going to Pittsburgh to direct a musical, and they're going to come with me, which is really exciting. But it's a big, you know, kind of adjustment for our family, because we've never, like, Rooney has always slept in his bed unless we were on vacation or something, but he's never been like away from home for a whole month. So
yeah.
That'll be
great that you're all together.
Oh, definitely.
I was gonna ask how you guys deal with long distance, you know, when you're directing regionally or something, but
mm-hmm.
This is the first time since he was born that you've had to
And so this is, you know, I don't think we're going to do it that often, but we'll see. Hopefully we'll get opportunities and we'll want to take them, and we'll want to try to figure out how to make it work. So luckily Pittsburgh in September, I think, is going to be lovely.
Yeah.
And I've been really surprised what a like charming city it is.
Yeah.
And so,
it's not like you're going in February. So that's
no, exactly. Exactly.
Things you can do outside.
Yeah. And we were just looking at the map and, you know, right across this bridge is a children's museum and around the corner is another thing. So, we're excited about this little adventure in Pittsburgh.
Can I ask between gigs how you guys manage like day job stuff?
Yeah. When I first moved to the city, I started just doing creative coordination for a company that does like internal marketing. And slowly I've sort of like, this was like, you know, 15 years ago, but slowly I've worked my way up to being a creative director for a number of different production companies around the city. And so I freelance creative direct for internal marketing campaigns.
What does that mean in layman's terms?
That means that if you are a corporation and you want to bring your company together or your sales force, or, you know, there are different types of audiences for all different corporations. But if you want to bring your people together and get them excited about a product launch, or, you know, if it's just like a yearly meeting where you need to come together and talk about where the company's at and what the priorities are moving forward, companies usually do that, like in a big ballroom, and there's a certain amount of production value that goes into these things. And so I'm the guy that comes up with the concept for that meeting, like what the graphics look like. Mm-hmm. If there are going to be outside motivational speakers, that happens occasionally. If there's going to be other entertainment, just sort of figuring out like what the story of their event is. And theater actually has been, they love, these agencies love that I come from the theater, because
yeah, it makes so much sense.
It makes sense. And they used to call it corporate theater. Like when I first started, they're like, we do corporate theater. And I was like, I don't think that makes any sense. That doesn't sound right. And they don't really call it that anymore. They call it, I guess they call themselves a production company. I define it as internal marketing because that's what it seems like.
Yeah.
To me. But theater, it is a theater of a sort. And I've been trying to like really think about like sort of apply the rules of dramaturgy and like the structure of plays to these events, just to sort of figure out a way to like break it down and make sure that we are telling the story that this company or that company wants to tell, and really creating an arc and an experience for their attendees. The great thing about doing this kind of work is that, you know, most of the freelancers don't have to be, I can do it from home for the most part.
And it's like event by event, is it pretty flexible? Like you need to leave for a month.
Yeah. They ask you if you have time to take on an event, and they give you the sort of parameters. It's, you know, an event of this size, and there are this many months until the actual event happens. So you can sort of like space out your time and know like, oh yeah, I can do this until October. Yeah. and then I can direct a show in November or whatever.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
But it's so connected to what you, to your artistic life, kind of.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's great in that way. It's sometimes you can get bogged down in it, and because it sounds more creative than it is sometimes, and I think that can be a little bit challenging because you feel a little stifled it's not art that stuff.
It's a lot of organizing.
Yeah, it's a lot of organizing, and oftentimes when you have like a really great outside of the box idea, it's sort of like a great glass of lemonade that someone just comes and keeps pouring more and more water into until you just have water that tastes a little bit like lemon. I mean, I was the first person in my family to ever finish college. Mm-hmm. So I think that they were just and that was something that I wanted for myself. I wasn't really pushed to go to college. It was something I always knew I wanted to do. And so I think that they are all just happy for me, and they were willing to let me explore whatever I wanted to explore, and just sort of trusted me to figure out the financial aspect of it all. And And that's, and they've been very supportive, and they've, you know, earlier in my career when I've needed help, and they, if they could provide it, they would. So that's been nice, but I, you know, they come to shows, they enjoy the shows, or at least they say they do. I mean, there is sometimes if like working on Shakespeare or something, like my, you know, my mom or dad, would say like, oh, she fell asleep or he fell asleep. So, you know, they don't get it all, but they try to.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Do you see yourself staying in New York long term?
I think so. I mean, I love raising Rooney here.
Yeah.
It's been really fun. His favorite thing is to go to the Choo Choo, which basically just means we go down to the subway station and he watches the trains pass, and he could do that for 20 minutes or more. We only sort of let him stay down there for like 20 minutes to watch, you know, four or five trains pass, and then we go back up. But that's sort of great that, and when he gets on the subway, he's so excited about the people, and he's really like open and wanting to connect with the people that want to connect with him. And, I think that's really important because I didn't have that experience growing up. You know, I lived in a cul-de-sac, and, you know, and so the only people I really came in contact with on a daily basis were either kids at school or, you know, the people, the neighborhood kids.
Yeah.
And we have a really great network of friends here that I really want to know Rooney as he grows up. In terms of the career stuff, sometimes it's like totally, it feels totally insane to me that we live in a city that costs so much and that we insist upon that, you know, we pretend that the artists get paid enough to live here when it's just absolutely crazy. So sometimes I think about, like that, is there a way to find another place to create the art you want to create, but also keep a home base here? I don't even know if that makes sense. I've been thinking about it a lot lately because for all of the life stuff, I like living here. For a lot of the career stuff, it feels insane. So. Yeah.
Still in your life in a big city like this. You're very lucky in that way.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think that that's been, that was a huge help, especially early on. And now it's funny because there are some people we're still close to from college and some people we're not as close to. And like with you, like we're closer now than we were in college, which is great. So, but sometimes I forget that you like, you know, who's from the same college or not, you know? So that's kind of a cool thing. Cause I don't introduce people that way. You know, now if I'm like with friends, I don't say, and this is my friend from college, you know, this is so.
It's becoming more of a fad, but it's something that I've always enjoyed doing as an actor.
Yeah, I did, especially early in the career, like out of necessity. I directed a Shakespeare play on a boat that was docked on the Hudson. Which was a lot of fun. And I mean, the actors, I think, hated me by the end of it because the boat smelled of like rotten oil. It's still there. I think they redid it. It's called the Frying Pan. It's like a big red light ship.
Bar.
And yeah, it used to be run by these people that didn't know what they had. There was a little bit of a bar attached, but it was basically just an old like rusty boat sitting there.
This is before it became like the office workers happy hour.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. One day we're doing a performance or a rehearsal or something, and we got kicked off because Bon Jovi wanted to do a photo shoot. And so, like, it was just used for, like, random things like that. And I don't even know that they charged us very much to, or anything, to use it. Anyway, that was, a time when we were... I basically just like, I was at an office job and I went on my lunch break and just walked to the river in the rain and saw this boat. I was like, yes, I wanted to direct a show here this summer and figured out a way to make it happen. I find I do that. I walk around the streets and I see spaces that seem interesting and I kind of like, you know, have a fantasy about what it would be like or what play would I do there. But I don't actually like go and knock on the doors anymore and ask like, Can I use this space to do this crazy thing I have in my head? I should.
Yeah, you should. I feel like in New York, it's one or the other. It's either like people are going to gouge you for all your worth to let you use their space, or you find these magical opportunities for them. Sure.
Yeah.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like it's happening more, the found space environmental theater is happening more and more. And so I guess it feels a little less interesting to me. Not that I'm not interested in seeing it, but I feel like it can feel like a gimmick. So I guess I would just want to make sure that I was finding, you know, the right space and pairing it with the right piece.
Yeah, that it's a motivated choice and it's not just like a marketing.
Yeah. Yeah, or just financially driven. Like, I think that, you know, because, like, if it's less expensive, because the black box theaters in the city are ridiculously expensive, and there are some organizations that are making them affordable, but there are few, and the good ones go quick. So a lot of times when you try to plan a production, you look around or start making phone calls, and, you know, things are booked. The good spaces are, like, booked for the next year, year and a half. I really have enjoyed working at here. I feel like that's a place where you actually, it's a nice space. It's, you know, got some nice amenities that audiences enjoy. And, it's a great location
too.
It's, and it's really affordable. They, you know, you have to apply and it's kind of a curation process, but they really treat you well and they really value the artists that come through there. Also, we were just at the it's called the 4th Street Theater on East 4th Street, but New York Theater Workshop runs it, and they were really great to us, and I know that they have some plans to renovate that space in the near future.
I kind of love that there's like several little theaters right on that part of the block.
Yeah.
So it kind of feels like you're in a little downtown arts district.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like those things, those kinds of downtown, like, theater districts, like, exist in other cities, or at least, maybe I'm just thinking about, like, when I've spent time in London, like, there's a whole building where there are, like, 4 small theaters, and these people are creating all different kinds of theater, and East 4th Street does feel like that.
Yeah, with La Mama, and there's some other new little spaces right
across the street. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. When we were doing Lone Star Spirits, there would be times, and there's also like the Red Room and KGB. Mm-hmm. And so on one side of us was Hadestown sort of rocking out at New York Theater Workshop. And on the other side was like a burlesque show where like people were, Prince, I think, had recently passed or something. And so they were doing like a Prince inspired burlesque show. And so like that was kind of, even though we could like sort of hear them through the walls, like during our play, it was okay because it was like, it just felt like, yes, I'm seeing a play in New York City and there are lots of things. Yeah. There's a big community and lots of things are happening all around you. And it was sort of a great kind of celebration of what Crowded Outlet wants to be, is, you know, sort of celebrating that abundance of aesthetics and.
Yeah.
Let me think. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's a trickier one.
Yeah. Well, it's really easy to get down on yourself and in the city. And I think that, you know, when you're constantly having to put yourself out there in interviews and pitching projects to different people, it's really easy just to, I mean, you know, actors feel it obviously more often than directors because they're going in for auditions constantly. And, you know, that's just a constant like string of rejection, with a few like, you know, bright spots. But you know, we feel it too when we have to go in and are constantly trying to convince people that we're, you know, smart enough, bright enough, you know, capable enough to direct something. And there are often times you're talking to someone and you're really excited about something and they just sort of glaze over or something. And so I've had to like teach myself to just to go in and be me and not to have a chip on my shoulder, not try to be what I think that they want me to be,
yeah.
and not overthink it and just be myself and pitch the project or pitch myself for a job that in a way that makes sense and feels natural and not forced in any way. And I think the thing that taught me that, and it happened several years ago, but I was interviewing to assist James Lapine on a project, and I was really sweaty because it was like a warmer day. It was the fall. It was November, but it was like a warmer day, and I get sweaty, especially if I'm nervous about things. And so I'm in the elevator and I'm just like perspiring like crazy and I'm trying to wipe it off. And so I get to the floor where his office is, and I go in and I just can't stop sweating. And his office is so pristine and wonderful. And I sit down on the couch and he sees me kind of like mop. He's trying to talk to me and look at my resume, and we've never met. And he's trying just to like do the interview thing. And then finally he realizes that I'm sweating profusely and trying to hide it, and goes, "Would you like a paper towel?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure. Maybe that's a good idea." And so he gives me a piece of paper towel, and I, you know, the interview goes on. I mop my brow and I eventually calm down and stop sweating. But I leave the paper towel on the couch in this beautiful office, this sweaty rag, without thinking about it. I say bye to him because the interview had gone pretty well.
Yeah.
And I go downstairs and I get around the corner and I'm standing outside of Duane Reade, and I realize, oh my God, I left that sweaty rag on that man's couch. And so I was like, well, I lost that job. But then I was like, no. And so I called him. At first his like office answer machine picked up, and then when he heard me like babbling about this sweaty rag, he picked up and he goes, "Would you like it back?" And I said, "No, I just wanted you to know that I'm not the kind of person that would leave." Like,
I realized that happened,
and I'm really sorry about it. Hung up. He didn't hire me for that job, but we did work together later on several projects. But I really do think that the reason that was such a me thing, like neurotic kind of me thing to do, to like call and explain myself, and it resulted in me working with James on a number of projects. I think that's why he remembered me, because I was that weird dude that decided to call back about this stupid piece of trash I left on his couch.
Yeah, and just to be comfortable with, like, this is who I am.
Yeah.
All right, great. Well, thank you for sharing that with me. When you are in this space where you're going to the dark side and feeling uninspired or frustrated, are there any concrete things that you reach for again and again, like a book or an activity or something? I know you mentioned running.
Yeah, I mean, running is definitely a thing I sort of had the idea to create Crowded Outlet when I was running, because I almost got hit by a car, and this car just like I live in Queens, and that sometimes people just run stop signs. They just don't think stop signs matter. And so, this car ran a stop sign, and like, if I hadn't stopped, like, and I don't even think he saw me at all. Like, he just kept driving through the stop sign. And so I sort of like, had this moment where it was just, I was sort of like shocked and sort of like taken out of myself for a moment, and, woken up in a way. And I started to think differently about what I was up to, in my career, and had the idea for Crowded Outlet on that run. But, which is just kind of a random thing. But so running has been a thing that will just sort of wake me up and get me thinking in a different way, with or without getting almost hit by a car. And then reading, I read a lot of fiction. I really think that I'm, you know, classics or new fiction is just a way to sort of like bring me to a new world and get me excited about storytelling again, and the different ways in which we can tell stories. And also nonfiction. I mean, reading is a great way. It's not a certain book or a certain author. Sometimes it's just finding a topic that is interesting to me at the moment, and reminding myself that, If you just like turn your brain off and allow someone to take you on a journey, something might come to you that you weren't expecting.
Yeah. And then lastly, is there anything
What have I seen this summer? Oh, I mean, it's not really a recommendation because it's already closed, but I was really surprised how much I enjoyed the Troilus and Cressida in Central Park this past summer.
I've never seen it produced before.
I had neither, but like the fighting, like especially in the whole second act was like an action movie, and I was just so impressed. And I've worked with Rick Sordelet over the years when I've assisted on different projects, and he's certainly someone I'm always like in awe of. But what they achieved with these like war sequences and fight sequences were just like magical. I mean, they were like gritty and violent, but also like so artfully crafted that I was just like, oh, this is like really amazing stagecraft at work here. Like working on a number of levels and making a play that no one, you know, most people wouldn't touch, really accessible to a lot of people. So I was really, maybe that's the last thing I've seen. I don't get to go to the theater much because I'm a parent.
Listening to the Compass podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.